What are you thinking? She asked. My spirit will not contend with humans forever, for they are mortal.
What?
She was smiling. It's from the Bible. She shifted the stuffed tiger to her other hand so she could take his.
Ugh, don't be morbid. It's a beautiful night, and we won't see each other again until it's over. Your problem is, you don't know how to live in the moment.
She tugged him from the main concourse into the shadows between two tents, where she kissed him, pressing her body tightly against his, and something opened inside him. She entered into him, and the terrible loneliness he'd felt since his awakening eased. Grace pulled away. Her cheeks were flushed, her eyes burning with a pale fire.
I think about it sometimes. The first kill, what it will be like.
He nodded. I think about it too. Mostly, though, I think about the last one. Chapter 26. He left the highway, cutting through open fields, crossing lonely country lanes, pausing to refill his canteen with water from an icy stream, navigating, as the ancients did, by the North Star. His injuries forced him to rest often, and each time he saw Grace in the distance. She didn't bother to hide. She wanted him to know she was there, just outside the range of the rifle. By dawn, he had reached Highway 68, the major artery connecting Huber Heights and Urbana. In a small stand of trees bordering the road, he gathered wood for a fire. His hands were shaking. He felt feverish. He worried the burns had become infected. His bodily systems had been augmented, but an enhanced body could reach a tipping point from which there was no return. His ankle was swollen to twice its normal size, the skin hot to the touch, and the wound throbbed with each beat of his heart. He decided to spend a day here, maybe two, and keep the fire burning. A beacon to draw them into the trap. If they were out there. If they could be drawn. The road before him, the woods behind him. He would remain in the open. Grace would stay in the woods. She would wait with him, out of her assigned territory, fully committed now. No going back. He warmed himself by the fire. Grace made no fire. His the light and warmth, hers the dark and cold. He shrugged out of the jacket, pulled off the sweater, slipped off the shirt. Already the burns were scabbing over, but they had begun to itch horribly. To distract himself, he whittled a new crutch from a tree branch salvaged from the woods. He wondered if Grace would risk sleep. She knew his strength grew with each passing hour, and every hour she delayed, her chances of success waned. He saw her at mid-afternoon on the second day, a shadow among shadows, as he gathered more wood for the fire. 50 yards into the trees, holding a high-powered sniper's rifle, a bloody bandage wrapped around her hand, another around her neck. In the sub-zero air, her voice seemed to carry into the infinite. Why didn't you finish me, Evan? He didn't answer at first. He continued gathering kindling for the beacon. Then he said, I thought I did. No, you couldn't have thought that. Maybe I'm sick of murder.
What does that mean?
He shook his head. You wouldn't understand.
Who is Cassiopeia?
He rose to his full height. The light was weak in the trees beneath a sheet of iron-gray clouds. Even so, he could see the cynical set of her lips and the pale blue fire of her eyes. The one who stood up when anyone else would have stayed down, Evan said. The one I couldn't stop thinking about before I even knew her. The last one, Grace. The last human being on Earth. She didn't say anything for a long time. He remained. She remained.
You're in love with a human.
Her voice was full of wonder. And then the obvious.
That's not possible.
We used to think the same about immortality. It would be like one of them falling in love with a sea slug. Smiling now.
You're mad.
You've gone insane.
Yes.
He turned his back to her, inviting the bullet. He was mad, after all, and madness came with its own armor.
It can't be that, she shouted after him. Why won't you tell me what's really going on?
He stopped. The kindling clattered to the frozen ground. The crutch toppled from his side. He turned his head, but did not turn around. "Take cover, Grace," he said softly. Her finger twitched on the trigger. Normal human eyes might have missed it. Evans did not. "Or what?" she demanded. "You'll attack me again?" He shook his head. "I'm not going to attack you, Grace. They are." She cocked her head at him, like the bird in the tree when he awakened in her camp. "They're here," Evans said. The first bullet struck her upper thigh. She rocked backward, but remained upright. The next round punched into her left shoulder, and the rifle slipped from her hand. The third round, most likely from a second shooter, exploded in the tree directly beside him, missing his head by millimeters. Grace dove to the ground. Evan ran. Chapter 27. Ran was an exaggeration, more like a frantic hop, swinging his bad leg wide to keep most of his weight on the good one. And each time his heel hit the ground, pinwheels of bright light exploded in his vision. Past the smoldering campfire, the beacon that had burned for 2 days, the sign he dug in the woods. "Here we are." Snatching the rifle from the ground in stride, he had no intention of standing his ground. Grace would draw their fire, a patrol of at least 2 recruits, maybe more. He hoped more. More would keep Grace busy for a while. How far? 10 miles? 20? He wouldn't be able to maintain this pace, but as long as he kept moving, he should be close to the hotel by dawn the next day. He could hear the firefight behind him. Sporadic pops, not continuous fire, which meant that Grace was being methodical. The soldiers would be wearing the eyepieces, evening the playing field a bit. Not much, but a bit. He abandoned any attempt at stealth and hit the highway, loping down the center of the road, a solitary figure under the immensity of a leaden sky. A murder of crows 1,000 strong whipped and wheeled over him, heading north. He kept moving, grunting with pain, every stride a lesson, every jolting footfall a reminder. His temperature soared, his lungs burned, his heart slammed in his chest. The friction from the clothes tore open the delicate scabs, and soon he was bleeding. Blood plastered his shirt to his back, soaked through the jeans. He was pushing it, he knew. The system installed to maintain his life past all human endurance could crash. He collapsed when the sun did, beneath the dome of the sky. A slow-motion, stumbling kind of fall, hitting shoulder first and rolling to the edge of the road, where he came to rest flat on his back, arms spread wide, numb from the waist down, shaking uncontrollably, burning hot in the bitter air. Darkness rolled over the face of the earth, and Evan Walker tumbled down to the lightless bottom, to a hidden room that danced in light, and her face the source of that light. And he had no explanation for it. How her face illumined the lightless place inside. "You're mad. You've gone insane." He thought so too. He fought to keep her alive, while every night he left her to kill the rest. Why should one live, though the world itself will perish? She illumined the lightless, her life the lamp, the last star in a dying universe. "I am humanity," she had written. Self-centered, stubborn, sentimental, childish, vain. "I am humanity. Cynical, naive, kind, cruel, soft as down, hard as tungsten steel." He must get up. If he can't, the light will go out. The world will be consumed by the crushing dark. But the totality of the atmosphere pushed him down and held him under 5 quadrillion tons of bone-breaking force. The system had crashed. Taxed past its limits, the alien technology installed inside his human body when he was 13 had shut down. There was nothing to sustain or protect him now. Burned and broken, his human body was no different than his former prey's. Fragile. Delicate, vulnerable, alone. He was not one of them. He was completely one of them. Wholly other. Fully human. He rolled onto his side. His back spasmed. Blood rushed into his mouth. He spat it out. Onto his stomach. Then knees, then hands. His elbows quivered. His wrists threatened to buckle under his own weight.
self-centered, stubborn, sentimental, childish, vain. I am humanity. Cynical, naive, kind, cruel, soft as down, hard as tungsten steel. I am humanity. He crawled. I am humanity. He fell. I am humanity. He got up. Chapter 28. A lifetime later, from his hiding place beneath the highway overpass, Evan watched the dark-haired girl sprint across the hotel parking lot, cross the interstate access ramp, trot a few hundred yards north on Highway 68, then pause beside an SUV to look back at the building. He followed her gaze to a second-story window, where a shadow flitted for an instant, then was gone. Mayfly. The dark-haired girl vanished into the trees bordering the highway. Why she had left, and where she was going, were unknown. Perhaps the group was splitting up. It would increase the chance of survival a little. Or perhaps she was scouting a more secure hiding place to ride out the winter. Whichever the case, he had the sense he'd found them just in time. The dark-haired girl was one, leaving at least four inside. The ones he had seen manning the windows. He did not know if any of them had survived the explosion. He wasn't even sure it had been Cassie's shadow in the window. Not that it mattered. He'd made a promise. He had to go in. He couldn't approach openly. The situation was complicated by too many unknowns. What if it wasn't Cassie, but a squad of fifth-wave soldiers cut off when the base blew, like the squad he'd left in Grace's care? He'd be dead before he crossed a dozen feet. The risk was nearly as great even if it was Cassie and a group of survivors. They might drop him before they realized who he was. Going in now, though, posed its own set of risks. He didn't know how many there were inside. Didn't know if he could manage two, much less four, heavily armed, trigger-happy kids jacked up on adrenaline, ready to blow away anything that moved. The system that augmented his body had crashed. "I'm fully human," he told Cassie. Now, that was literally true. He was still weighing the options when a tiny figure appeared in the parking lot. A child, wearing fifth-wave fatigues. Not Sam. Sam had been dressed in the white jumpsuit of the underaged and newly processed. But young. 6 or 7, he guessed. Following the same route as the dark-haired girl. Even pausing by the same SUV to look back at the hotel. This time he saw no shadow in the window. Whoever had been there was gone. That made two. Were they abandoning the hotel one at a time? Tactically, it made some sense. Shouldn't he simply wait, then, for Cassie to come out, rather than risk his life going in? And the stars spun overhead, marking the time winding down. He started to get up, then sank back. Another one exited the hotel, much larger than the one before. A big kid with a large head, toting a rifle. Three now. None of them Cassie, or Sam, or the friend from Cassie's high school. What was his name? Ken? With each exodus, the odds of Cassie not being in this group increased. Should he even attempt entry? His instinct said go. No answers, no weapons, and hardly any strength. Instinct was all he had left. He went. Chapter 29. For over 5 years, he'd relied on the gifts that made him superior to humans in almost every way. Hearing, eyesight, reflexes, agility, strength. The gifts had spoiled him. He'd forgotten what normal felt like. He was getting a crash course now. He slipped into a ground floor room through a broken out window, hobbled to the door, and pressed his ear against it. But all he could hear was the thundering of his heart. Easing the door open, sliding into the hall, listening, waiting in vain for his eyes to adjust to the dark. Down the hall and into the lobby, his own breath frosted in the frigid air, otherwise silence. Apparently, the ground floor was deserted. He knew someone was standing at the small hallway window upstairs. He caught a glimpse of him as he maneuvered his way into the building. Stairwell, 2 flights. By the time he reached the second landing, he was dizzy from the pain and out of breath from the effort. He tasted blood. There was no light.
he was entombed in utter darkness. If there was only one person on the other side of this door, he had seconds. More than one, and time didn't matter. He was dead. Every instinct said wait. He went. In the hall on the other side of the door was a small kid with extraordinarily large ears, and a mouth flying open in astonishment the moment before Evan locked him in the chokehold, pressing his forearm against the kid's carotid, cutting off the blood supply to his brain. He dragged his squirming catch back into the black pit of the stairwell. The kid went limp before the door clicked shut again. Evan waited for a few seconds on the other side. The hall had been empty, the snatch quick and relatively quiet. It could be a while before the others, if there were others, realized their sentry was gone. He dragged the kid to the bottom of the stairs and tucked his unconscious body into the small space between the steps and the wall. Went back up, cracked open the door. Halfway down the hall, another door opened and two shadowy figures emerged. He watched them cross the hall and enter another room. They reappeared a moment later and went to another door. They were checking each room. The stairs would be next. Or the elevator. He'd forgotten about the elevator. Would they drop down the shaft and take the stairs from below? No. If there are only two, they'll split up. One for the stairs, one down the shaft, and meet up in the lobby. He watched them come out of the last room, then go to the elevator, where one held the doors while the other dropped out of sight into the shaft. The one who remained had trouble standing, holding his stomach and grunting softly from the effort, favoring one side as he limped toward Evan. He waited. 20 feet. 10. 5. Holding the rifle in his right hand, his gut with his left. Standing on the other side of the door, Evan smiled. Ben. Not Ken. Ben. Found you. Too dangerous to trust that Ben would recognize him and not shoot him on the spot. He burst through the door and rammed his fist as hard as he could into Ben's wounded stomach. The blow knocked the breath out of him, but Ben refused to go down. Rocking back, he brought his rifle up. Evan slung it to one side and hit him again, same spot, and this time Ben went down, dropping to his knees at Evan's feet. His head fell back, their eyes met.
I knew you weren't for real, Ben gasped.
Where's Cassie? He knelt, grabbed two fistfuls of the yellow hoodie Ben was wearing, and brought their faces close. Where's Cassie? If he had been his old self, if the system hadn't crashed, he would have seen the blur of the blade as it came around. Heard the infinitesimally small whistle of it cutting through the air. Instead, he wasn't aware of the knife until Ben had buried it in his thigh. He fell back, dragging Ben with him. Hurled him to one side as Ben ripped the knife free. Evan slammed his knee down on Ben's wrist to neutralize the threat and clamped both hands over Ben's face, covering his nose and mouth and pushing hard. Time spun out. Beneath him, Ben thrashed and kicked, whipped his head from side to side, his free hand clawing for the rifle less than an inch from his fingertips. And time froze. Then, Ben went still, and Evan fell away, gulping air, drenched in blood and sweat, and feeling as if his body might burst into flames. No time to recover, though. Down the hall, through a crack in the door, a small, heart-shaped face turned his way. Sam. He pushed himself to his feet, lost his balance, careened into the wall, fell. Back up again, convinced now it was Cassie who had dropped into the shaft. But he had to secure Sam first, except the kid had slammed the door and was now screaming obscenities through it. And then, as Evan dropped his hand on the knob, he opened fire. He threw himself against the wall next to the door, while Sam emptied the magazine. When the pause came, he didn't hesitate. Sam had to be neutralized before he could reload. Evan had a choice. Kick open the door with the bad foot, or put all his weight on it while he kicked with the other. Neither option was good. He chose to kick with the broken one. He couldn't risk losing his balance. 3 hard, sharp kicks. 3 kicks that produced pain as he'd never experienced it before. But the lock broke with a loud wallop, and the door slammed into the wall on the other side. He fell into the room,
and there was Cassie's brother crab-crawling toward the window, and somehow Evan remained upright. Something held him up and propelled him toward the child, hand outstretched.
"I'm here. Remember me?
I saved you before. I'll save you again." And then, behind him, the last one, the final star, the one he carried across an infinite sea of white, the one thing he'd found worth dying for, opened fire. And the bullet connected them when it wetted bone, binding them together as if by a silver cord. 4. Millions. Chapter 30. The boy stopped talking the summer of the plague. His father had disappeared. Their supply of candles ran low, and he left one morning to find more. He never came back. His mother was sick. Her head hurt. She ached all over. Even her teeth hurt, she told him. The nights were the worst. Her fever shot up. Her tummy couldn't hold anything down. The next morning she would feel better. "Maybe I'll get over it," she said. She refused to go to the hospital. They'd heard stories, terrible stories, about the hospitals and walk-in clinics and emergency shelters. One by one, families fled the neighborhood. Looting was getting bad and gangs roamed the streets at night. The man who lived two doors down was killed, shot in the head for refusing to share his family's drinking water. Sometimes a stranger wandered into the neighborhood and told stories of earthquakes and walls of water 500 feet high, flooding the land as far east as Las Vegas. Thousands dead. Millions. When his mother became too weak to get out of bed, the baby became his responsibility. They called him the baby, but he was actually almost 3. "Don't bring him near me," his mother told him. "He'll get sick." The baby wasn't that much work. He slept a lot. He played only a little. He was just a tiny kid. He didn't know. Sometimes he would ask where his daddy was or what was the matter with mommy. Most of the time, he asked for food. They were running out of food, but his mother wouldn't let him leave. "It's too dangerous. You'll get lost, you'll get abducted, you'll get shot." He would argue with her. He was 8 and very big for his age, the target of schoolyard taunts and cruel insults since he was 6. He was tough. He could handle himself. But she wouldn't let him go. "I can't keep anything down, and you could stand to lose a little weight anyway." She wasn't being cruel. She was trying to be funny. He didn't think it was funny, though. Then they were down to their last can of condensed soup and wrapper of stale crackers. He heated the soup in the fireplace, over a fire he fed with pieces of broken-up furniture and his father's old hunting magazines. The baby ate all the crackers, but said he didn't want the soup. He wanted mac and cheese. "We don't have mac and cheese. We have soup and crackers, and that's all we have." The baby cried and rolled on the floor in front of the fireplace, screaming for mac and cheese. He brought a cup of the soup to his mother. Her fever was bad. The night before, she had started throwing up the lumpy black stuff, which was the lining of her stomach mixed with blood, though he didn't know that then. She watched him come into the room with dead, expressionless eyes. The fixed stare of the Red Death. "What do you think you're doing? I can't eat that. Take it away." He took it away and ate it standing at the kitchen sink while his baby brother rolled on the floor and screamed, and his mother sank deeper into mindlessness, the virus spreading into her brain. In the final hours, his mother would disappear. Her personality, her memory, the who of who she was. Surrendering before her body. He ate the lukewarm soup and then licked the bowl clean. He would have to leave in the morning. There was no more food. He would tell his little brother to stay inside no matter what, and he wouldn't come back until he found something for them to eat. He snuck out the next morning. He looked in abandoned groceries and convenience stores. He looked in looted restaurants and fast food places. He found dumpsters reeking of decaying produce. And overflowing with torn open garbage bags where many hands before his had searched. By late afternoon, he'd found only one edible morsel. A small cake about the size of his palm, still in its plastic wrapper, underneath an empty shelf in a gas station. It was getting late. The sun was going down. He decided to go home and return the next morning. Maybe there were more cakes and other kinds of food stashed or lost, and he needed to look harder. When he got home, the front door was ajar. He remembered closing it behind him, so he knew something was wrong. He ran inside. He called for the baby. He went room to room. He looked under beds and inside closets and in the cars that sat cold and useless in the garage. His mother called him into her room. Where had he been? The baby wouldn't stop crying for him. He asked his mother where the baby was, and she snapped at him. Can't you hear him? But he heard nothing. He went outside and yelled the baby's name. He checked the backyard, walked over to the neighbor's house, and banged on the door. He banged on every door on the street. Nobody answered. Either the people inside were too scared to come out, or they were sick or dead or just gone. He walked several blocks one way, then several more the other way, calling his brother's name until he was hoarse. An old woman tottered out onto her porch and screamed at him to go away. She had a gun. He went home. The baby was gone. He decided not to tell his mother. What would she do about it? He didn't want her to think he was bad for leaving. He should have brought him along, but he thought it was safer at home. Your home is the safest place on earth. That night, his mother called to him. Where is my baby? He told her the baby was asleep. It was the worst night yet. Bloody tissues watered on the bed, bloody tissues crowding the nightstand, littering the floor. Bring me my baby. He's asleep. I want to see my baby. You might make him sick. She cursed him. She told him to go to hell. She spat bloody phlegm at him. He stood in the doorway, hands nervously fiddling in his pockets, and the cake wrapper crackled, the plastic damaged by the heat. Where have you been? Looking for food. She gagged. Don't say that word. Watching him with bright red, bloody eyes. Why were you looking for food? You don't need any food. You're the most disgusting piece of pig lard I've ever seen. You could live till winter on just your belly fat. He didn't say anything. He knew it was the plague talking, not his mother. His mother loved him. When the teasing at school got bad, she went to the principal and said she would file a lawsuit if the bullying didn't stop. What's that noise? What's that horrible noise? He told her he didn't hear anything. She got very angry. She started to curse again, and bloody spittle spattered on the headboard. It's coming from you. What are you playing with in your pocket? There was nothing he could do. He had to show her. He pulled out the cake, and she screamed for him to put it away and never take it out again. No wonder he was so fat. No wonder his baby brother was starving while he ate cakes and candies and all the mac and cheese. What sort of monster was he that he ate all his baby brother's mac and cheese? He tried to defend himself, but every time he started talking, she screamed at him to shut up, shut up, shut up. His voice made her sick. He made her sick. He did it. He did something to her husband, and he did something to his baby brother, and he did something to her, made her sick, poisoned her. He was poisoning her. And every time he tried to speak, she screamed at him. Shut up, shut up, shut up! She died 2 days later. He wrapped her in a clean sheet and carried her body into the backyard. He doused the body with his father's charcoal lighter fluid and set it on fire. He burned his mother's body and all the bedding, too. He waited another week for his baby brother to come home, but he never did. He searched for him and for food. He found food, but not his brother. He stopped calling for him. He stopped talking altogether. He shut up. 6 weeks later, he was walking down a highway dotted with stalled-out cars and wrecks of cars and trucks and motorcycles when he saw black smoke in the distance and, after a few minutes, the source of the smoke, a yellow school bus full of children. There were soldiers on the bus, and the soldiers asked his name and where he was from and how old he was. And later he remembered nervously stuffing his hands in his pockets and finding the old piece of cake, still in its wrapper. Pig lard. Live till winter on your belly fat. What's the matter, kid? Can't you talk? His drill sergeant heard the story of how he came to camp with nothing but the clothes on his back and a piece of cake in his pocket. Before he heard the story, the drill sergeant called him Fat Boy. After he heard the story, the drill sergeant renamed him Pound Cake.
I like you, Poundcake. I like the fact that you're a born shooter. I bet you popped out of your mama with a gun in one hand and a donut in the other. I like the fact that you got the looks of Elmer Fudd and the goddamned heart of Mufasa. And I especially like the fact that you don't talk. Nobody knows where you're from, where you've been, what you think, how you feel. Hell, I don't know and I don't give a shit, and you shouldn't either. You're a mute-assed, stone-cold killer from the heart of darkness with a heart to match, aren't you, Private Poundcake?
He wasn't. Not yet.
5. The Price. Chapter 31. The first thing I planned to do when he woke up was kill him. If he woke up. Dumbo wasn't sure that would happen. He's messed up bad, he told me after we stripped him down and Dumbo got a good look at the damage. Stabbed in one leg, shot in the other, covered in burns, bones broken, shaking with a high fever. Though we piled covers on him, Evan still shook so violently that it looked like the bed was vibrating. Sepsis, Dumbo muttered. He noticed me staring dumbly at him and added, when the infection gets into your bloodstream. What do we do? I asked. Antibiotics. Which we don't have. I sat on the other bed. Sam scooted to the foot, clutching the empty pistol. He refused to give it up. Ben was leaning on the wall, cradling his rifle and eyeing Evan warily, like he was sure any second Evan would bolt out of bed and make another attempt to take us out. He didn't have a choice, I told Ben. How could he just stroll up in the dark without somebody shooting him? I want to know where Poundcake and Teacup are, Ben said through gritted teeth. Dumbo told him to get off his feet. He'd repacked the bandages, but Ben had lost a lot of blood. Ben waved him away. He pushed himself from the wall, limped to Evan's bedside, and whacked him across the cheek with the back of his hand. Wake up! Whack. Wake up, you son of a bitch! I shot from the bed and grabbed Ben's wrist before he could pop Evan again. Ben, this won't... Fine. He yanked his arm away and lurched toward the door. I'll find them myself. Zombie! Sam called out. He popped up and ran to his side. I'll come too. Cut it out, both of you, I snapped. Nobody's going anywhere until we... What, Cassie? Ben yelled. Until we what? My mouth opened and no words came out. Sam was tugging on his arm. Come on, zombie. My 5-year-old brother waving around an empty gun. There's a metaphor for you. Ben, listen to me. Are you listening to me? You go out there now.
I am going out there now.
And we might lose you too. Shouting over him. You don't know what happened out there. Evan probably knocked them out like he did you and Dumbo, but maybe he didn't. Maybe they're on their way back right now, and going out there is a stupid risk. Don't lecture me about stupid risks. I know all about... Ben swayed. The color drained from his face and he went down to one knee, Sam grabbing futilely on his sleeve. Dumbo and I pulled him up and got him to the empty bed, where he fell back, cussing us and cussing Evan Walker and cussing the whole fucked up situation in general. Dumbo was giving me a deer in the headlights look like, you got the answers, right? You know what to do, right? Wrong. Chapter 32. I picked up Dumbo's rifle and pushed it into the kid's chest. We're blind, I told him. Stairway, both hall windows, east side rooms, west side rooms, keep moving and keep your eyes open. I'll stay here with the alpha males and try to keep them from killing each other. Dumbo was nodding like he understood, but he wasn't moving. I put my hands on his shoulders and focused on his jiggly eyes. Step up, Dumbo, understand? Step up. He jerked his head up and down, a human Pez dispenser, and slumped out of the room. Leaving was the last thing he wanted to do, but we'd been at that point for a long time now, the point of doing the last thing we wanted to do. Behind me, Ben growled, Why didn't you shoot him in the head? Why the knee? Poetic justice, I muttered. I sat next to Evan. I could see his eyes quivering behind the lids. He had been dead. I'd said goodbye. Now he was alive, and I might not be able to say hello. We're only about 4 miles from Camp Haven, Evan. What took you so long?
We can't stay here, Ben announced. It was a bad call sending Ringer ahead. I knew we shouldn't have split up. We're bugging out of here in the morning.
How are we gonna do that? I asked.
You're hurt. Evan is-
This isn't about him, Ben said.
Well, I guess it is to you.
He's the reason you're alive right now to bitch, Parrish.
I'm not bitching.
Yes, you are. You're bitching like a junior Miss Beauty Queen.
Sammy laughed.
I don't think I'd heard my brother laugh since our mother died. It startled me, like finding a lake in the middle of a desert.
Cassie called you a bitch, Sam informed Ben in case he missed it.
Ben ignored him.
We waited here for him, and now we're trapped here because of him. Do what you want, Sullivan. In the morning, I'm out of here.
Me too, Sam said.
Ben got up, leaned on the side of the bed for a minute to catch his breath, then hobbled to the door. Sam trailed after him, and I didn't try to stop either one of them. What would be the point? Ben cracked the door and called softly to Dumbo not to shoot him. He was coming out to help. Then Evan and I were alone. I sat on the bed Ben had just abandoned. It was still warm from his body. I grabbed Sammy's bear and pulled it into my lap. Can you hear me? I asked. Evan, not the bear. Guess we're even now, huh? You shoot me in the knee, I shoot you in the knee. You see me butt naked, I see you butt naked. You pray over me, I... The room swam out of focus. I took bear and popped Evan in the chest with it.
And what was with that ridiculous jacket you were wearing?
The pinheads, that's about right. That nails it.
I hit him again.
Pinhead.
Again.
Pinhead.
Again.
And now you're going to check out on me? Now?
His lips moved, and a word leaked out slowly, like air escaping from a tire.
Mayfly.
Chapter 33. His eyes opened. When I recalled writing about their warm, melted chocolateness, something in me went, gah. Why did he have this knees-to-jelly effect on me? That wasn't me. Why did I let him kiss and cuddle and generally mope around after me like a forlorn little lost alien puppy? Who was this guy? From what warped version of reality did he transport into my own personal warped version of reality? None of it fit. None of it made sense. Falling in love with me might be like me falling in love with a cockroach, but what do you call my reaction to him? What's that called? If you weren't dying and all, I'd tell you to go to hell. I'm not dying, Cassie. Fluttery lids, sweaty face, shaky voice.
Okay, then go to hell. You left me, Evan, in the dark, just like that, and then you blew up the ground beneath me. You could have killed all of us. You abandoned me right when-
I came back. He reached out his hand.
Don't touch me.
None of your creepy Vulcan mind meld tricks.
I kept my promise,
he whispered.
Well, what snarky comeback did I have for that?
A promise was what brought me to him in the beginning. Again, I was struck by how really weird it was that he was where I had been and I was where he had been. His promise for mine. My bullet for his. Down to stripping each other naked because there's no choice. Clinging to modesty in the age of the others is like sacrificing a goat to make it rain.
You almost got shot in the head, moron, I told him. It didn't occur to you to just shout up the stairs, "Hey, it's me, hold your fire!"
He shook his head.
Too risky.
Oh, right, much more risky than chancing your head getting blown off. Where's Teacup? Where's Pound Cake?
He shook his head again.
Who?
The little girl who took off down the highway? The big kid who chased after her? You must have seen them.
Now he nodded.
North.
Well, I know which direction they went.
Don't go after them.
That brought me up short.
What do you mean?
It isn't safe.
Nowhere is safe, Evan.
His eyes were rolling back in his head. He was passing out.
There's Grace.
What did you say? Grace?
As in Amazing Grace or what? What's that mean, there's Grace?
Grace,
he murmured, and then he slipped away. Chapter 34. I stayed with him till dawn, sitting with him like he sat with me in the old farmhouse. He brought me to that place against my will, and then my will brought him to this place, and maybe that meant we sort of owned each other, or owed each other. Anyway, no debt is ever fully repaid, not really, not the ones that really matter. You saved me, he said, and back then I didn't understand what I had saved him from. That was before he told me the truth about who he was, and afterward I thought he meant I had saved him from that whole human genocide mass murderer thing. Now I was thinking he didn't mean I saved him from anything, but for something. The tricky part, the unanswerable part, the part that scared the crap out of me, was what that something might be. He moaned in his sleep. His fingers clawed at the covers. Delirious. Been there and done that too, Evan. I took his hand. Burned and bruised and broken. And I had wondered what took him so long to find me. He must have crawled here. His hand was hot. His face shone with sweat. For the first time it occurred to me that Evan Walker might die. So soon, too, after rising from the dead. You're going to live, I told him. You have to live. Promise, Evan. Promise me you're going to live. Promise me. I slipped a little, tried not to, couldn't help it. That'll complete the circle, then we're done. We're both done, me and you. You shot me and I lived. I shot you and you live. See? That's how it works. Ask anybody. Plus the fact that you're Mr. 10 centuries old super being destined to save us pitiful humans from the intergalactic swarm. That's your job. What you were born to do, or bred to, whatever. You know, as plans to conquer the world go, yours has been pretty sucky. Almost a year into it, and we're still here. And who's the one flat on his back like a bug with drool on his chin? Actually, he did have some drool on his chin. I dabbed it up with a corner of the blanket. The door opened, and big old Pound Cake stepped into the room. Then Dumbo, grinning from big ear to big ear, then Ben, and finally Sam. Finally, as in no teacup. How is he? Ben asked. Burning up, I answered. Delirious? He keeps talking about grace. Ben frowned. Like amazing grace? Maybe saying grace like before a meal? Dumbo suggested. He's probably starving. Poundcake lumbered over to the window and stared down at the icy parking lot. I watched him Eeyore walk across the room, then turned to Ben. What happened? He won't say. Then make him say. You're the Sarge, right? I don't think he can. So teacups vanished and we don't know where or why. She caught up with Ringer, Dumbo guessed. And Ringer decided to take her to the caverns, not waste any time bringing her back. I jerked my head toward Poundcake. Where was he? Found him outside, Ben said. Doing what? Just hanging out. Just hanging out? Really? You guys ever wonder which team Poundcake might be playing for? Ben shook his head wearily. Sullivan, don't start. Seriously, the mute act could be just an act. Keeps you from having to answer any awkward questions. Plus, the fact that it makes a lot of sense planting one of your own into each brainwashed squad in case anybody starts to wise. Right, and before Poundcake, it was Ringer. Ben was losing it. Next, it'll be Dumbo, or me, when the guy who admitted he was the enemy is lying right there, holding your hand. Actually, I'm holding his hand, and he isn't the enemy, Parrish. I thought we covered this. How do we know he didn't kill Teacup or Ringer? How do we know that? Oh, Christ, look at him. He couldn't kill I tried to think of the proper thing he had the strength to kill, but the only thing my hungry, sleep-deprived brain could come up with was Mayfly, which would have been a really, really bad choice of words. Like an inadvertent omen, if an omen can be inadvertent. Ben whipped around to Dumbo, who flinched. I think he preferred Ben's wrath be directed at anybody but him. Will he live? Dumbo shook his head, the tips of his ears growing bright pink. It's bad. That's my question. How bad? How soon before he can travel? Not for a while? Damn it, Dumbo, when? A couple weeks, a month? His ankle's broke, but that's not the worst. The infection?
Then you've got the risk of gangrene. A month. A month! Ben laughed humorlessly. He storms this place, takes you out, beats the crap out of me, and a couple hours later he can't move for a month?
Then go! I shouted across the room at him. All of you! Leave him with me, and we'll follow you as soon as we can.
Ben's mouth, which had been hanging open, snapped closed. Sam was hovering near Ben's leg, one tiny finger hooked into his big buddy's belt loop. Something in my heart gave a little at the sight. Ben told me they called my little brother Zombie's Dog in camp, meaning ever faithfully by his side. Dumbo was nodding.
Makes sense to me, Sarge. We had a plan, Ben said.
His lips barely moved.
And we're sticking to the plan. If Ringer isn't back by this time tomorrow, we're bugging out.
He glared at me.
All of us.
He jabbed his thumb at Poundcake and Dumbo.
They can carry your boyfriend if he needs to be carried.
Ben turned, bumped into the wall, pinballed off it, lurched through the door and into the hall. Dumbo trailed after him.
Sarge, where are you? Bed, Dumbo, bed. I gotta lie down or I'm gonna fall down. Take the first watch. Nugget, Sam, whatever your name is, what are you doing?
I'm coming with you.
Stay with your sister. Wait, you're right. She's got her hands full. Literally. Poundcake, Sullivan has the duty. Get some shut-eye, you big mute mother...
His voice faded away. Dumbo came back to the foot of Evan's bed.
Sarge is strung out, he explained like I needed him to explain. He's usually pretty chill.
Me too, I said. I'm the laid-back type. No worries. He wouldn't go away. He was looking at me and his cheeks were as bright red as his ears.
Is he really your boyfriend?
Who?
No, Dumbo, he's just a guy I met one day while he was trying to kill me.
Oh, good. He seemed relieved.
He's like Vosh, you know.
He's nothing like Vosh.
I mean, he's one of them.
Lowering his voice like he was sharing a dark secret.
Zombie says they're not like these tiny bugs in our brains, but somehow they downloaded themselves into us like a computer virus or something.
Yeah, something like that.
That's weird.
Well, I guess they could have downloaded themselves into house cats, but going that route would have made our extermination more time-consuming.
Only by a month or two, Dumbo said,
and I laughed. Like Sammy's, mine surprised me. If you wanted to separate humans from their humanity, I thought, killing laughter would be a good place to start. I was never very good at history, but I was pretty sure douchebags like Hitler didn't laugh very much.
I still don't get it, he went on. Why one of them would be on our side?
I'm not sure he completely understands the answer to that question. Dumbo nodded, squared his shoulders, took a deep breath. He was dead on his feet. We all were. I called softly to him before he stepped outside.
Dumbo,
Ben's question, unanswered.
Is he going to make it?
He didn't say anything for a long time.
If I were an alien and I could pick anybody I wanted, he said slowly, I'd pick a really strong one. And then, just to make sure I'd live through the war, I'd like, I don't know, make myself immune to every virus and bacteria on Earth. Or at least resistant. You know, like getting your dog vaccinated for rabies.
I smiled. You're pretty smart, you know that, Dumbo? He blushed.
That's a nickname based on my ears.
He left. I had the eerie feeling of being watched, because I was being watched. Poundcake stared at me from his post by the window. And you, I said. What's your story? Why don't you talk? He turned away, and his breath fogged the window.
Chapter 35
Cassie! Cassie, wake up!
I bolted upright. I'd been curled up next to Evan, my head pressed against his, my hand in his, and how the hell did that happen? Sam was standing beside the bed, pulling on my arm.
Get up, Sullivan!
Don't call me that, Sam's, I mumbled. The light was bleeding from the room. It was late afternoon. I'd slept through the day.
What?
He put one finger to his lips and pointed at the ceiling with another. Listen.
I heard it. The unmistakable sound of a chopper's rotors, faint but growing louder. I jumped from the bed, grabbed my rifle, and followed Sam into the hall, where Poundcake and Dumbo huddled around Ben, the former quarterback squatting on his haunches, calling the play.
"Might be just a patrol," he was whispering. "Not even after us. There were two squads out there when the camp blew. Might be a rescue mission."
"They'll pick up our signatures," Dumbo said, panicking. "We're done, Sarge."
"Maybe not,"
Ben said hopefully. He'd gotten back some of his mojo.
"Hear it? Fading already."
Not his imagination. The sound was fainter. You had to hold your breath to hear it. We hung there in the hall for another 10 minutes until the sound disappeared. Waited another 10 and it didn't come back. Ben blew out his cheeks.
"Think we're good."
"For how long?" Dumbo wanted to know. "We shouldn't stay here tonight, Sarge. I say we head for the caverns now."
"And chance missing Ringer on our way back?"
Ben shook his head.
"Or risk that chopper coming back while we're exposed? No, Dumbo, we stick to the plan."
He pushed himself to his feet. His eyes fell on my face.
"What's up with Buzz Lightyear? No change?"
"His name is Evan, and no, no change." Ben smiled. I don't know, maybe imminent peril made him feel more alive somehow, for the same reason zombies are carnivores with only one item on the menu. You never heard of undead vegetarians. Where's the challenge in attacking a plate of asparagus? Sam's giggled.
"Zombie called your boyfriend a space ranger."
"He isn't a space ranger, and why is everyone calling him my boyfriend?" Ben's smile broadened.
"He's not your boyfriend, but he kissed you."
"Full on?"
Dumbo asked.
"Oh yeah, twice, that's what I saw."
"With tongue?"
"Ew."
Sammy's mouth formed a sour lemon pout.
"I have a gun,"
I announced, only half joking.
"I didn't see any tongue," Ben said.
"Want to?"
I stuck my tongue out at him. Dumbo laughed. Even Poundcake smiled. That's when the girl appeared, stepping into the hallway from the stairwell, and then everything got very strange, very fast. Chapter 36. A mud, or it could have been blood, stained, tattered pink Hello Kitty t-shirt. A pair of shorts that once had been tan, maybe, faded to a dirty white. Grungy white flip-flops with a couple stubborn rhinestones clinging to the straps. A narrow, pixie-ish face dominated by huge eyes, topped by a mass of tangled dark hair. And young, around Sammy's age. Though she was so thin, her face looked like a little old lady's. Nobody said anything. We were shocked. Seeing her at the far end of the hall, teeth chattering, knobby knees knocking in the freezing cold, was another Camp Ashpit yellow school bus pulling up when school would never exist again moment. Something that simply could not be. Then Sammy whispered, "Megan?" And Ben said,
"Who the hell is Megan?"
Which was very much what the rest of us were thinking. Sam took off before anybody could grab him. Pulled up halfway to her. The little girl didn't move. Didn't hardly blink. Her eyes seemed to shine in the dwindling light, bright and birdlike, like a wizened owl's. Sam turned to us and said,
"Megan!"
As if he was pointing out the obvious.
"It's Megan, zombie. She was on the bus with me."
He turned back to her.
"Hi, Megan."
Casually, like they were meeting up at the monkey bars for a playdate.
"Poundcake?" Ben said softly. "Check the stairs. Dumbo, take the windows. Then sweep the first floor, both of you. There's no way she's alone."
She spoke, and her voice came out in a high-pitched, scratchy whine that reminded me of fingernails scraping across a blackboard.
"My throat hurts."
Her big eyes rolled back in her head. Her knees buckled. Sam raced toward her, but he was too late. She went down hard, smacking the thin carpeting with her forehead a second before Sam could reach her. Ben and I rushed over, and he bent down to pick her up. I pushed him away.
"You shouldn't be lifting anything," I scolded him.